The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast.
Dr. Taz. Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show. I am excited today to bring you Jonas Kofler. Jonas is the New York Times and Los Angeles Times best-selling co-author of Hustle, The Power to Charge Your Life with Money, Meaning, and Momentum. He's also the founding partner of Radical Wellness and a co-host of the Mental Wellness Summit series. He's a recognized expert in the area of innovation and an award-winning media producer. Jonas, I am excited to have you here. I know I met you at Mindshare over the summer and instantly felt connected to you. And I really want my audience to hear your story. I mean, you have such an amazing story, and it really honestly begins in your 20s. And my understanding is, and I didn't know this back in the summer, but you actually had a stroke in your 20s. Tell us a little bit about that and about your background.
Happy to do that, and thank you very much for having me, Dr. T. And it's great to be with you. And I really enjoyed meeting you at Mindshare as well. So this is a true gift for me. Happy to give you some more background. I think the gist of it is, you know, when you're as I was, a very curious, impressionable, and somewhat precocious guy who has, on the one hand, a very deep desire to grow in life and some real aspirations. On the other hand, not a clear sense of direction, that can create some challenges. And I think for me, it was dealing with, at times, you know, crippling anxiety and fear and depression as I'm slowly making my way in the world and exploring things that are of interest to me. That led me, you know, out of college and various odd jobs where I was, again, sort of exploring and navigating the space of life and trying to get a sense of who I was. Into the startup world, and at the time it made sense. You know, I was interested in technology and interested in democratizing information, and in this case, learning. And so I literally, you know, put my head down and hustled my way up from, you know, an entry-level position to a product management or senior-level position at this company, and, you know, had some degree of direction over the control of the things that we were doing. And that there's a couple of things. One, it gave me a deep sense of confidence, but at the same time, it also brought a layer of crushing weight and expectations. Mm-hmm. And I think these caused stress. And it wasn't simply that the job was hard, because the job was hard for everyone. And that's sort of the nature of work today. And that was a choice. And it was a choice I loved, and it was a company I loved, and colleagues whom I loved, and really drew inspiration from. I did feel like we were changing the world. But the other side of it, sort of the dark side of that aspiration, is you also have a life outside of work, right? Or supposedly
yes.
You do. And
yes.
We try to compensate for the little time we have. And in my case, it was overexertion and not sleeping and not really taking care of myself. No zero practical sort of self-care. And what happened was I woke up one day and I had dizziness and sort of a flashing experience in one of my eyes. And I sort of shook it off and thought, well, this is probably, you know, lack of sleep or something else, but I'll have a cup of coffee and be fine. And after a few more cups of coffee, I found myself standing up to give a presentation at a meeting for the team, and I felt my hand go numb, and then my arm go numb, and my lip drooped, and the words, while they were clear in my mind, I couldn't articulate them to the team. And so it got progressively worse from there, actually. I sat down and I was moved out of the room, and I remember immediately recognizing that something seriously was wrong. One of my colleagues was massaging me, saying, "It's going to be okay, it's going to be okay." And next thing you know, my vision was completely impaired to the point where I couldn't see. And then the next thing I remember is, you know, being at the hospital and going through a battery of scans and so forth, and being told the following day that I had a stroke, and it was an ischemic stroke as opposed to hemorrhagic, so more of an ephemeral or short-lived, theoretically, but still I experienced all sorts of memory issues, and it was, you know, a great humbling experience for me.
And how old were you? Just for everyone to have a frame of reference, how old are you at this time?
I was in my mid-20s at the time. So, you know, this is...
Wow.
It was pretty devastating. And at the time, I also believe that my life would be forever altered and I would be impaired, mentally and otherwise. So, you know, for someone who aspires to quote-unquote greatness, whatever that means, for me this was a huge wake-up call. And, you know, as a spiritual person, I felt like, you know, God or the universe had intentionally stroked me to help me see the world a little differently and maybe to wake up and snap out of this spell where I wasn't taking care of myself. So there was certainly a, you know, in the adversity, there was an opportunity there.
I mean, you completely took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, for all of you listening out there today, these wake-up calls are sort of, they are spiritual reckoning, so to speak. They're sort of an opportunity almost for you to come to terms with the choices you're making in your life and how you're taking care of yourself. And, you know, again, huge believer in synergy. And I spent most of the morning thinking about very much the same ideas, you know, that, you know, we all aspire to greatness. We all really want to impact and change the world. I want to leave a very definitive stamp and say, you know, at the end of my days that I've been able to impact the world in a meaningful and profound ways. But in the journey to do so, you know, we can't continue to sacrifice ourselves, or these wake-up calls, whether it's a stroke in your case, cancer in someone else's case, an autoimmune disease, you know, the loss of a loved one, a divorce, whatever these wake-up calls are, you know, they really force us to come to terms with the choices we're making. And it sounds like the gift for you was you had this wake-up call at 25. For many people that I sit with, it happens very late, and they have very little time to change the course of what's happening. I'm so curious to see, you know, what you did afterwards. How did you take this experience, and how did you channel it and push all the amazing things I talked about in the introduction? Talk us through that a little bit.
Sure. So it's been a building process. Initially, and we're talking, you know, directly post-stroke, there was a recovery period, and I was very fortunate in that my company was fully supportive of that. And as were my colleagues. And so part of this is a community effort, and healing, I think, very much is a community experience. And we feel it acutely personally, but it's a social experience as well. I think that the first thing I did was literally slow down and almost shut down all sorts of sources of stress. That was number one. Everything else melted away. Work was not important anymore. What was important was what I was putting into my body, what I was feeding my mind, how I was sleeping at night. So these types of choices I was making, surrounding myself with positive people, you know, cutting out negative elements, sort of the obvious things that people should do, or one, you know, of right mind should do, but many of us don't do. And so that was the starting point, seeking all sorts of treatments that I could get, from acupuncture to Reiki, to massage, to getting into yoga, to taking long walks, to rebuilding my mind and my verbal abilities. I wasn't able to articulate clearly. My language skills dropped off immensely. I will say, if there was any sort of light in it, was the fact that things like, you know, picking up second or third languages tends to help us recover more quickly. And I found that if I was stuck in trying to convey thoughts in English, and I was all the time, then I would switch to Spanish to do something called code switching. And I found that I was able to express, articulate my thoughts, and then I could translate back into English at times if needed. So it's interesting, you know, sort of the unknown or the mystery, that the things that we can surface in our minds, that this sort of unlimited capacity for healing that we all have, it's just a question of how we access and trigger that. So for me, again, it's learning and unlearning, and it's trying to persist and pursue the things that were able to feed me in the positive ways in all aspects of my life. And the other things I found very therapeutic were playing music and singing, you know, singing songs, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, it gave me a sort of a grounding experience. But I think overall the frame is really just simply slowing down.
I want to take just a second to thank our sponsors today for hosting the show. Here's the deal. To truly thrive in all areas of your life, you cannot ignore the importance of good health. I've learned this firsthand, and for many of us, time is our most valuable asset. This is why I love Organifi Green Juice, an organic superfood green juice powder you just add to water to get your greens anytime, anywhere. When you invest in your health, you gain more time because you have more energy and focus to get through your day.
The best thing about Organifi green juice is that it actually tastes good. Try it for yourself and use the code WHOLEHEALTH at Organifi.com to receive 20% off your order.
So, Jonas, you're 25. You begin this process of recovery. You slow down, essentially. You integrate all these different modalities, positive people, healing techniques into your plan of recovery. How long did your recovery take? How long did it take for you to really feel maybe a little bit like your old self and even stronger?
That's a great question. So the short answer is that old self is gone. And I would actually argue that old self is dead. And good riddance. Okay? Because I think in sort of shedding that skin, if you will, I was able to find out sort of who I was again. And, you know, this is one of the points that we talked about that we wrote about, rather, in Hustle, and it's based on the work of Dan Gilbert and others, part of this idea of our shifting identity, right? The end of history illusion, which essentially says that, you know, our identity is constantly evolving throughout our lives. Now, for me, I didn't know that, but I was certainly living it, making peace with the past, who I was, so that I could become the person that I was destined to become, and getting comfortable with that notion that I was going to change over time. I think for me, it was accepting that I would not be that perfect, impeccable, you know, great human that I was striving to be. Instead, would be an incredibly flawed, not necessarily a failure, but even if I was a failure, that was totally acceptable because I'm still alive, right? Thank God that I can, you know, heal on some level and recover some of these mental faculties and be okay with that. And the rest of it doesn't matter. So I think, you know, it was accepting that. So acceptance is the beginning, as Rimbaud wrote, right? So accepting that, all right, that person is gone. You're not going to be that person. Great. Now, who are you going to become, right? Start asking the questions around. And this is what I did. I went through this process. Who am I, right? Where am I going? How do I get there? And it's just baby steps moving forward. And that's, you know, so in sort of broad strokes, that's what I focused on. And I wasn't, you know, that allowed me to become more present, right? That wasn't focused on the future all of the time. I was focused on the now and enjoying the moment as much as I could. It was a very meditative experience. That experience, that healing journey, is one which I still lead today and I sustain, right? It's far from perfect, but I am driven by curiosity about the world, about ways that we can incorporate habits, dare I say, and practices in our lives in a practical way. And that has led me on the path that where I am. And again, you know, I'm very happy and very much at peace with where I am. And there's so much work to still be done, both in terms of healing, both in terms of helping other people and growing at a personal level. And so look, I think it's a constant thing, Dr. Taz. It's not one and done. And I think many of us are misguided in thinking that, oh, you know, I recovered from this and I'm done and the work is done. The work is you are a work in progress, put it that way.
Okay, for all of you listening out there, there's a lot that he just said, and I hope you were able to capture a little snippet of it at least. First of all, I've sat with many of you who have grieved when you've lost something, whether it's your health or your former self, like Jonas did. But I think acceptance, like he said, is the number one lesson. And if you don't remember anything from today, I think that is the number one lesson, learning to accept yourself and learning to move on and learning that the journey continues day in and day out. It's not an end point, like many of us were trained to believe. There's not a goal that's going to satisfy everything. It's taking things day to day and molding that day and experiencing whatever it is that day is going to bring. You know, Jonas, one thing I know when I sit with a lot of my patients or when I speak, you know, and I talk a lot about, you know, and I work with a lot of children too, I talk a lot about how some of the smartest, brightest, highest functioning people and children have a lot of anxiety, stress, depression, which eventually, when it's not, you know, managed and controlled and they're not given the toolbox to really cope with that, then it turns into different types of addictions. You know, you are a new person now. You're not your old self. You're not that person with a lot of anxiety. How do you reconcile wanting to do a lot and accomplish a lot, you know, having that drive, having that passion for accomplishment, so to speak, with also tempering and understanding what you need to do for yourself? How do you reconcile that? And I think that's something that a lot of my listeners struggle with, and I think I see it's something that a lot of patients struggle with as well.
Sure. I think for me, it's been a conscious psychological commitment to, on the one hand, sort of honoring my health as much as I can. And I'm not perfect, again, and being okay with that, but making sure that I do make time. So, for example, I look at, I have a relatively organized life, even though it's somewhat chaotic, and I'll unpack that in a second. But there are tools that we do have, as you mentioned. There are tools like calendars that help us schedule our time, so we have some sense of expectations during the day, right? And that might mean also unscheduling, right? Or meaning leaving blocks of white space where we can be creative and or make time for sitting and meditating or doing yoga or spending time with friends or reading a book, right? Or unplugging from, these devices that control so much of our lives.
Yes, they're everywhere.
Compartmentalizing, right? And,
yes.
And compartmentalizing, right? The idea of finding the things that you really enjoy doing, right? It's almost like sort of finding the strengths that you have in life and focusing on those things and living your life through the lens of those things that enrich you rather than detract from your well-being. So, for me, running or being involved in multiple companies and traveling constantly, my wife and I are heading to Iceland today, right, in a few hours.
Oh, wow.
And then on to Edinburgh and so forth for her graduation. And then, so look, I think it's structuring your life in a way that is supportive of your needs. And so for me, it's having a clear sense of what my expectations are every day, scheduling time for that morning walk or the afternoon walk or the meditation, where you're just sitting for 10 or 20 minutes or doing some reading and figuring out blocks of time where you're really focused and can do the sort of deep work that you need to do, whether it's writing or, finishing up a project or wherever you might be, or, dealing with patients. Those things are totally at our own disposal. So it's exerting some degree of control. And I think when we do that, we find a little more sense of clarity, a little more sense of the ability to feel empowered and confident. But I think if we have to be active or even proactive in that regard, right? Otherwise, there's just too much chaos out there. And there's too much pressure on us to check in on social media and to sort of check out of our own lives.
I could not agree more. I talk to people every day about how important it is to schedule time for yourself. It needs to be on that calendar, even if it's 10 to 15 minutes on a daily basis, or it's a 2 to 3 hour block that you do at least once a week. And it's really hard, I think, for Jonas or for me to tell you exactly how that looks, because each of you should have unique passions and motivations and things you love to do and things you enjoy. So again, it's that acceptance of you, understanding yourself, and then creating that time within your schedule to slow down and recover. And what Jonas is not telling you is that in his slowing down, he has been incredibly successful. His book has been a New York Times bestseller. He's launched the Mental Wellness Summit series, and he's done so many other things in between. So, Jonas, I think you're a testament to how sometimes when you slow down, your greatest work appears. Would you agree with that as well?
I do agree with that. I also, again, sort of being a deeply spiritual person, having this physical experience in the world, I tend to, it's sort of almost like a sort of a Taoist philosophy. There is a flow to things in life. And I find that the more you force things, the worse or more dissatisfied you're going to find yourself. And instead, you really want to move in the direction of, energetically, something that feels like something is fundamentally supportive. And that might be a project that you choose to do, say a new film, in my case, launching a new restaurant, or working on a new component of our company, Radical Wellness, and in our mental wellness series. Or it could be, finding people of like mind who are supportive of you. Discovering folks who give you joy, and instead of, no butting you, no, you can't do that, no, it's not a good idea, no, you find people who are yes and types. It's very much
yes,
in the improvisational stream, which is to say that life has its own definitive rhythm, and it's a rhythm that should be supportive and positive and optimistic and should point you in the direction where you're constantly being fed positive reinforcement. And when you get negative reinforcement, it's time to do a gut check. Maybe it's not the right project. Maybe it's not the right people you should be working with. Maybe it's not the right healing path. Maybe it's not the right prescription for you. You have to listen to these things. There's an intuitive quality and truth there that are undeniable.
I love it. You know, be the energy that you want to attract. It's so important. I love your message. Tell us a little bit about the Mental Wellness Summit Series. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I bet there are some people out there listening today who may be motivated to jump in and learn more.
Sure. So this evolved out of a conversation. I was actually at a film festival presenting a film that I produced, and a friend of mine said, you know, you really should get in touch with Ross McKenzie, whose film I just seen and was curious about at this festival. And so he connected us. Ross, his film was called Bipolarized. It maps his journey from a misdiagnosis to using integrative means to deal with some deeply buried abusive stuff that he went through as a child. Suffered at the hands of an alcoholic father and so forth, and his path to healing. And in that experience he met his naturopathic doctor, who was a specialist in root cause resolution. Our third partner is John Dempster. The three of us came together. Mm-hmm. We launched the first Mental Wellness Summit. It was a huge success, and you know, our whole frame or focus was on integrative paths to root cause resolution. So in doing that, and it's not one cure per se, but it's trying a lot of different things to figure out what works for people from a causal perspective, and then helping them get on a path where they feel supported and in community. And so, you know, our shell company is called Radical Wellness, and the Mental Wellness Summit is a series that we've now produced two of them. We have the Mental Wellness Tribe, which is our community, and we're also running a 28-day Mental Wellness Challenge. So all of these are online, and you know, I can send links if people are interested. But the whole idea there is that healing for us is a conversation, first and foremost. It's not a one and done. It's not as simple as you're given a prescription and good luck. I think there's much more to healing than that. And I think as an integrative physician, you would certainly agree with that. And beyond that, it's not in any way to demonize pharmaceuticals or to say they're wrong. They're certainly a big part of the conversation. And thank God we have them. But I think the other part of the equation is, what can we look at in terms of our diet? How are we sleeping? What does our social interaction look like? Are we tied up hours a day on, you know, social or anti-social media, right? Are we feeling more isolated and lonely and anxious and depressed? Are we totally disengaged? Have we made a horrible choice of our career? We have to look at the full spectrum of the human experience. And that's what we are aiming to do with not only the Mental Wellness Summit, but also with our tribe. And, you know, it's an ongoing conversation, and it's fascinating, quite frankly.
What have you seen emerge out of the Mental Wellness Summit series? Are there stories of people who have sort of healed themselves from anxiety and depression and continue that healing journey and use that tribe as a support group? What do you think the advantage of that summit is over maybe the conventional approach to dealing with anxiety, depression, addiction, so many of these mental health issues that we see today?
That's a good question. Okay, so in terms of the stories and outcome, right? The stories and outcome. What we were seeking was validation that this was something that would be of benefit. So this being the Mental Wellness Summit, the first one. And what we got was stories of people who had seen the summit and who had been turned on to new modes of thinking about healing and new practices and finding new practitioners that they could work with to supplement or complement any other types of care that they were experiencing. And what we found is that the more people stuck with it and decided to orient to a full spectrum integrative approach to root cause resolution, the more healthy they felt, the more confident they felt. And with us being in community of other people who are seekers and folks who are looking for solutions to healing, and mind you, this is not just patients and consumers, this is practitioners as well, right?
Right. So
it's interesting that we isolated. It's everyone. Yeah. Right. So we have the positive series. And I think beyond that, and the story is that, you know, we're getting more curiosity and more interest. You know, we're in four continents now and have over 100,000 people who are subscribers. So so for us, how do we, you know, the next leap is let's go a little more mainstream and deal with this as a societal problem. I mean, there's a reason why, Dr. Taz, you know, there are more people like me, you know, in their 20s and 30s and 40s who or having strokes, right? That's not accidental. There are dietary and lifestyle choices. There are all sorts of peer pressure choices. There is professional weight of careers these days and things that I think people are feeling very, very acutely, and we simply don't have the tools to cope with them. We're not taught how to cope with them in school, right? And that causes all sorts of challenges for us. So, you know, I think the work that we need to do as, I think, community, an integrative community, is to broaden the conversation. And that's what we're trying to do with Radical Wellness.
I love it. I could not agree more. This is an epidemic. This is a problem. It is a international problem. We can't even say it's an American problem. We have more highest rates of anxiety, depression, addiction than we've had in generations. And, you know, even when I turn around and look at the younger children, I only see this stuff younger and younger every year that I'm in practice. And it quite honestly scares me. So we have to find a way to educate all of us, children, professionals, adolescents, college students, all of us, on how to deal with the society that we live in today, and really, quite honestly, how to stay and be connected. And social media does not count, because that's actually disconnection. I love the idea of something like the Mental Wellness Summit, because people have blocks, right? They don't want to go to the doctor. They don't want to go to a support group. They don't want to go somewhere quite often. So I feel like this is such a great way. If you know somebody out there suffering from any one of the things we've talked about today, I think this is such a great way to actually begin and initiate that conversation and to start to create connections within your communities and within your homes, so that, you know, your families and your peers hopefully aren't suffering from these conditions that can lead, in Jonas's case, to a stroke. You know, so Jonas, what's next for you? I'm so curious. I know you have a lot on the table often, and you're guided by intuition. I'm curious to see kind of what's next for you and what you're hoping for in terms of your next goals.
Sure. So a number of things, and you know, it's never one thing per se, but I do tend to compartmentalize. So currently, I'm finishing up a narrative feature film script, and that'll be done in the next 2 weeks. And that'll be something that, with a little luck, will go into financing and hopefully production late next year. And it's a political thriller, and based on a book that I worked on some years back. And then beyond that, a startup that I'm working on in the fintech space, and then beyond that, Radical Wellness, which is our startup, of course, I'm based in Toronto with Dr. John Dempster and Ross McKenzie and our partners there, and a number of other things. So we have another documentary that's going into post-production on spiritual bluesmen, and then, you know, we have a couple of restaurant investments in Los Angeles.
Wow, and,
an app that I'm developing as well. So, yeah, I'll keep you posted on all these things, but the idea for me, Dr. Taz, one is I recognize that life is short, all right? Mm-hmm. And while we all strive for longevity, you know, when you're stroked, as I was, or when you have some kind of serious health setback, it really brings perspective to what gives you meaning. For me, it is movement and doing the things that bring me a sense of joy and a sense of fulfillment and meaning, right? And beyond that, it's being able to work with really fantastic people. That charges my life, you know, much in the hustle sense, right? And it's constantly shaking things up, looking for opportunities to grow, and again, to surround yourself with people who will be supportive of your mission. So, you know, there's that tack, or that sort of chart path, is one that I am absolutely fixed on, and I have no intention of slowing down, God willing. And so that's kind of what's next for me.
Amazing. And I hope all of you out there have been motivated by Jonas's story, from having a stroke in his 20s to learning to slow down, receive the gifts of the Spirit, find your true calling, and then go after it, all the while taking care of yourself. Check out the book. It's Hustle, The Power to Charge Your Life with Money, Meaning, and Momentum. And please check out the series, the Mental Wellness Summit series. I am so passionate about the idea that we need to connect. We need to connect as parents, as communities, as families, as political groups. We have so much need for connection right now. And if this is an avenue to do it, let's do it. Jonas, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. I know my listeners appreciate it, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Dr. Taz. Best wishes. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Take care. Thank you, Jonas.
Thank you so much. We'll be